Welcome back everyone to the channel. Tonight is a very special night. Why, you may ask? Because today, May 17th, is my birthday. That's right, now you know, today is my birthday. I want to see hundreds of happy birthday comments down below in this video. Tonight's horrifying story is about this guy who did not lead a great life. He ended up dying, going to hell, but finding a way out, supposedly, and what he goes through and experiences will blow your mind. Now let's get spooky. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up, and tell a friend. I was never a very good person in life. I cheated on my wife, cheated on my taxes, stole from my business partners, beat my kids anytime they looked at me wrong, and overall just acted as a general scumbag. In hindsight, I see it clearly. I wish I could start over and do it all again. One night on my way home from my law firm, a freak ice storm covered the highway. I had four-wheel drive and didn't think about the falling sleet and hail until a truck in front of me began to slide, then jackknifed and flipped, landing not even 10 feet in front of my SUV. I had no time to react. I slammed on the brakes at the very last millisecond, but ended up going over the side of the trailer at 70 miles an hour without a seatbelt on. The last thing I remember was time slowing down to a crawl as I flew through the windshield, shards of safety glass glittering like stars all around me in the winter air. Then, it was blackness. I woke, screaming and hyperventilating in the same blackness, but without any pain. In the darkness, I felt my body running my hands over my arms, legs, chest, and face. I didn't seem to have a single broken bone or laceration. I was even in the same expensive Armani suit I'd been wearing during the accident. It seemed miraculous that I somehow survived unscathed, without even a tear in my suit. I stood in the darkness, putting my hands out in front of me and stumbling around in short, hesitant steps. After a few minutes of this, I ran into a wall. The wall felt warm and seemed to vibrate under my fingers. I pushed on it, and my hands went into it, like pushing into silly putty. I began to rip away pieces of the wall and throw them behind me, and a shaft of light pierced through the hole I had just made. The light illuminated the cavern I was in, showing a floor of cobblestone soaked in layer after layer of dark red clotted blood. The wall itself looked like the guts of some massive creature. It had long shards of white bone running through the top and bottom with smaller pieces of bone connecting them. The rest was some light red and vibrating tissue, like intestines that have been unspooled to form a never-ending solid wall. I looked down at my hands and saw with horror that dozens of black maggot-like worms squirming all around my wrists and hands. With a yelp and a jump backwards, I frantically tried to shake them off, but I could feel hot stings coming from my hands as they bit me over and over. After a few minutes of writhing and rubbing my hands together, I got them off. I could feel my heart beating out of my chest, and instinctually kept checking the rest of my body to make sure I didn't miss any more of the biting, blood-sucking maggots. The soft, fiery light that came through the hole I made in the living wall showed me a door on the opposite side of the hall from the wall. From what I could see, it had a strange hallway that went off into the darkness. Having no other good options, I started walking down the hall. The minuscule light quickly fading into nothing. I put my hands out in front of me and felt the smooth stone walls. I walked in a straight line for what felt like hours before seeing a glimmer of red light, at first only a tiny pinpoint. As I walked towards it, it grew and grew until I realized I was staring at a door that must have been 20 feet tall, surrounded by polished white bones on all sides. The bones that composed the framework of the door were so massive, they looked like they had come from a blue whale, as if someone had taken the ribs off one and fused them together into an archway. All I could think of as I approached this door was my wife, my child, my job. Everything that I identified as me, everything that gave me meaning. Despite having cheated on my wife many times, I still loved her deep down. After all, I had protected her from the knowledge of what a poor husband I was, simply out of love for her. I had never let my 5-year-old suspect that his father was involved in anything illegal or immoral. My love for them had made me protect them from all the things I had to do to guarantee us a better life. And now I just wanted to see them again, to be with them. I knew I was basically a good person. I just wanted another chance to prove it. I kept their faces in my mind's eye as I walked through the massive archway. It looked big enough to drive a tractor trailer through. I saw flickering lights coming from the other side, and taking in a deep breath, I stepped over the threshold. What I saw horrified me and shocked me into stillness. I had walked into an open field, the dark red and black clouds above blocking out the sky. The light filtering through them cast everything in a bloody glow. The field itself looked at first like a farmer's field, with finely spaced rows of soil plowed into perfect lines. Growing out of the earth stood many squat brown plants covered in thorns. Out of the tip of each one, a large egg sac clung, weighing the plant down and bending many of them to the ground. The egg sacs were pale and unbroken, filled with fluid and dark silhouettes in each one. I saw beings writhing, one adult-sized silhouette in each sack, some putting their faces up to the wall of the sack in a silent scream, others trying to reach their arms or legs out through, but the sturdy covering of the yolk just bowed out and their arms and legs and didn't pop. It looked as if the people inside the eggs were all drowning. I quickly began speedwalking between the lines of horrifying plants, wondering whether the plants fed on the people in the sacks or whether it just fed them and gave birth to them. As I passed the first row, one of the sacks burst, and a torrent of fetid, rotting fluid bursted out, dumping a beautiful naked woman at my feet. She had long blonde hair and green eyes, flawless skin, and a tiny upturned nose. She heaved in a deep breath, as if she had been drowning, before looking up at me. "Oh God," she said, "please don't hurt me." I shook my head and helped her to her feet. "Why would I hurt you, ma'am?" I asked. "Everyone here hurts me," she said, starting to weep. Her fingers shook as she sobbed, bowing her head in a pathetic way. I grabbed her arm. "I promise you, I will not hurt you. I am one of the good guys, but I think we should get going," I said. "We really need to find a way out of here."
"Out of here?" she asked, crying and laughing at the same time. "There is no way out of here. Don't you know where you are?"
I shook my head.
"This is hell. I don't know if it is the hell in the Judeo-Christian sense, but it is close enough. Everyone here is dead."
"I don't feel dead," I said, rubbing my hands on my suit, my face, my hair. "Everything seems intact." She nodded at this. Her crying quieted down as she focused on my face.
"Everyone comes in like that," she said, "until they catch you, torture you, burn you, rip you apart. Then, when your body is too spent to feel anymore, they bury you up in these fields. These plants grow overnight, encasting your body in a sack and bringing it up to the surface, where it starts to feed you and revive you. After you have healed enough for another round of torture, the fruit of the plants bursts."
"But who brings you to these fields? Who is in charge?" I asked. Her pupils dilated, her eyes wide, and whispered the answer.
"Angels."
At that moment, a bolt of lightning shot down from the red sky,
bursting open dozens of plants nearby and showering us in a mixture of blood, amniotic fluid, thorns, and leaves. I grabbed her arm.
"Let's get out of here," I said. "We could talk about this more when we're somewhere safe."
She laughed at this, as if it was the most absurd thing she had ever heard, and we began to run.
"By the way," I said, gasping between breaths, "my name is Jay."
"Angela," she said. At the end of the field, I saw a paved road. It had countless potholes and cracks running through it, and some parts of it had been wiped out and fallen into a stream that ran parallel to it on the farther side. But I was still glad to see some sign of a trail.
"A road!" I cried, pointing in excitement. "Maybe that road leads somewhere out of this hellhole."
She shook her head in amazement at my stupidity, but I ignored her. I had to hope there was some way out, that this wasn't just a never-ending landscape of horrors under a blood-red sky. The road seemed to stretch out in both directions forever, fading into each horizon in a perfectly straight line. I could see parts of the road were entirely missing, and it looked like some bridges had collapsed farther down in the direction I was looking. So I turned the opposite way and started moving, holding Angela's hand as I went. Her presence gave me some comfort. She even reminded me of my wife to a certain degree, as they both had very light skin and an overall Irish cast in their faces.
"If this is hell," I said, "then why are you here?"
She looked up at me, surprised by the question. Heaving in a deep sigh, she looked away.
"No sense in keeping secrets here, I guess," she said. "We're just going to be captured and tortured to death again anyways. That's all there is here. Just a never-ending cycle of pain and death. A lot of these people completely lose their minds."
She rubbed her head over her eyes, as if her head hurt her.
"I always wanted to be an actress, but I grew up having no money. I met an older man who said he believed in me and that he wanted to take me to L.A. But we both needed money to get from the East Coast to L.A. and to live there while I looked for work. He convinced me to rob a bank with him to get it. Needless to say, it didn't work out very well. He got spooked and murdered two of the tellers before a security guard came out and shot him in the head. I grabbed his gun and killed the guard, took the money and ran. When the cops caught up with me, I pulled over slowly, put the gun in my temple, and pulled the trigger. I had absolutely no intention of going to prison for the rest of my life. I was just a stupid kid, really.
I can't believe this angelic, innocent-looking young woman had participated in murders. It shocked me to my core.
"If this is hell," I said, "I really don't feel I belong. Yes, I did some bad things, but I never killed anyone, never put a gun to anyone's head. Hell, never even killed an animal."
She looked up at me sharply.
"You're only lying to yourself," she said. "No one innocent comes here. But I don't really care what you did, to be honest. We are both trapped here, and that's all we need to know. There is no hope. Just don't betray me. Our only chance of surviving longer is to stick together and to trust each other."
As we ran, the fields began to fade, and what looked like an old, dilapidated western town began to take place. I saw people hanging by their necks from the streetlights. Overall, it seemed the safest place in the area, however, so I began to pull Angela over in that direction. There was an old saloon with swinging gates, and we walked inside, wary of any traps. In the corner, I saw what looked like a medieval knight with massive white wings floating out from his back. He held a man's mouth open while another man in a full suit of glowing blue armor poured molten lead down his throat. The man screamed for a moment, then the lead ate through his neck and he collapsed to the ground.
"Angels,"
Angela said to me. Their heads turned towards us, but there was no faces there. It was just an empty black void under a platinum helmet, one that seemed to glow from our inner light. They approached me and I grabbed Angela.
"Please, please, take the girl and let me live,"
I screamed, my heart bursting with anxiety in my chest. They looked at each other, then back at me.
"Tell me how to get out of here and she's all yours. I'll hold her down while you burn her alive or cut her to pieces. Please, I just want to see my family.
To my utter astonishment, they nodded at me. One spoke at a deep, slow cadence, his voice sounding like thousands of voices of different pitches all mixing and echoing over each other.
You could ride the lightning up to Earth, one said. The lightning connects us to those calling on magic, those who call on demons or try to contact ghosts. Any who are weak and small can be overwhelmed by those who ride the lightning up to them and possess them. But you will always return to us in the end.
I nodded, throwing Angela in their direction and turning to run back to the field. Lightning was crashing down all around me now, bursting egg sacs and plants every few seconds, but I was no longer afraid of it. I looked up at the sky and saw a swirling whirlpool of red and black and stood under it as a bolt struck me directly in the center of my head. I felt myself being sucked up at an incredible speed and saw above the clouds a deep void. I fell into the void and saw through another set of eyes. Two teens playing with a Ouija board in a graveyard, giggling as if it was a game, surrounded by black candles.
Demons, we call you to answer us!
One of them, with a high voice, shrieked. As his mouth opened, I rushed into it. His eyes widened in shock as I pushed his soul out, sending it spiraling back into the void I had just emerged from. I now had complete control of his body.
Hey, man, the other kid asked me. Are you okay?
I nodded, smiling, looking around at the clear sky and feeling relieved to be back.
Never been better, buddy. Part 2.
As I took over the body of the teenager, a sense of euphoria and exhilaration filled me. I had escaped from hell. I looked around the cemetery, frowning, scanning the mind of the child I possessed. I gained his name, Kurt, and his address, among other critical information. I found myself in Maine, in the absolute middle of nowhere. But it would have to do. The friend stared at me with wide eyes, clear anxiety marring his expression.
"You don't look good at all, man," he said. "You look pale as shit all of a sudden."
My body wavered and I tripped, nearly falling before the friend grabbed my arm and steadied me. Scanning the mind of the child, I found the name of his friend.
"Thanks, Andre," I said. "Maybe it was just something I ate. A little touch of food poisoning or something. I guess I really didn't feel that good. I'm just gonna head home."
Andre nodded seriously at me.
"I'll pick up the Ouija board and candles and everything," he said. "Too bad we didn't get to see anything supernatural happen, huh?"
"Yeah, too bad," I said, walking away. If only he knew.
Out of the corner of my eye, as I started walking down the side of the road under the streetlights, I saw the silhouette of an angel, like the ones I had seen torturing people in hell. Its wings spread out massively behind it, 20 feet in each direction, softly swaying to and from like a flag in a slight breeze. But when I turned my eyes to look directly at it, there was nothing besides an ancient oak tree with countless branches reaching up to the moonlit sky.
"My eyes are playing tricks on me," I said to myself. Then I remembered the horrifying thousand voices of the angel as it turned its empty space of a face towards me. How it had said to me, "You will always return to us in the end." I shuddered. I felt like it had been staring directly into my soul, judging me and finding me wanting. I had never done psychedelic drugs in my life, but I felt like I was on what I imagined LSD or peyote would feel like. I kept seeing figures out of the corners of my eyes, shadows running across the street, faces in the trees and eyes staring out from the surrounding forest. But whenever I turned my attention to them, they disappeared. It was like something was mocking me, always staying directly out of the view of the center of my vision, but playing games on the periphery instead.
The ground began to tremble, as if an earthquake was starting. I heard running from behind me, and turned to see Andre standing there, sweating and out of breath.
God, did you just feel that?
He said, his eyes widening with fear.
I think we're having an earthquake. We don't have earthquakes in frickin' Maine. What the hell is going on right now?
He was right. When Maine had earthquakes, they were generally so small no one felt them. But right now, it was just getting more and more intense. Trees began to fall in the forest. The smashing branches created an echoing canopy that blotted out all of Andre's words afterwards. I saw his lips moving, but I couldn't hear anything beside the crashing of the earth, the collapsing of crypts in the nearby cemetery, and trees continuously breaking apart. All of a sudden, I felt a whooshing sensation, and heard deafening crashing inches away to my left. A massive pine tree branch crashed into the ground, its smaller branches slicing up my shirt and back as I fell. At that moment, Kurt and I began to run to the only open area that was close, the cemetery. It seemed to be the only place where we wouldn't get crushed to death by falling trees and branches. We didn't even have to speak to each other, but both sprinted in a blind panic, breathing hard and my heart beating out of my chest. The shaking behind us was getting so bad that the road was starting to crack. We sprinted as fast as we could, nearly tripping a few times as the pavement heaved and split all around us and branches fell in the distance. The forest around us seemed like it was coming apart. I heard alarms going off in the distance, first car alarms and then the wailing of a tornado siren in the center of downtown. People were definitely waking up, noticing something was very wrong, and I had a feeling it was all my fault. As we ran into the cemetery, I first began to see for certain that this was not a normal earthquake. Hands were reaching out of the ground, some skeletal, other with flesh still hanging on their cracking bones. I could see the muscles and tendons of those closest as they moved with frantic energy and unbelievable speed, shoveling dirt away and ripping a hole open as they emerged from underneath. Crypts flew open as bodies bashed through the doors with superhuman strength, sending shards of stone flying in all directions. From the eyes of every corpse, I could see pure blackness, just like the blackness of the faces of the angels who controlled hell. The blackness was piercing, shimmering, beyond any absence of light. It was as if a hole was actually ripped into reality right where the eyes of the corpses used to be, and all of the hundreds of them staring directly at me, ignoring Andre completely. Then, in an instant, the shaking stopped. The silence was deafening and eerie in the aftermath of such a cataclysm. All I could hear was the ringing in my ears and the pounding of my heart.
"You will return to us,"
the corpse in front of me shrieked, his voice sounding like thousands of deep, distorted voices overlapping. He was a half-decomposed elderly man in an expensive Armani suit, strands of white hair still hanging to the papery skin of his skull, his teeth and the muscles of his jaw showing through the decaying holes in his cheeks as he spoke.
"Do you need more rope to hang yourself with, sinner? Will you not accept your fate? You dare take the body of an innocent child just to fulfill your own selfish desires and try to escape the fate that you deserve?"
Another corpse began to move from my right, a young woman who looked much fresher, but had a massive bullet hole through her forehead. Otherwise, she could have still been alive. Yet she spoke with the same voice of the other corpse. The cacophony of many beings blended their vocalizations together almost, but most completely in sync. Her screaming was so loud I felt my chest vibrating, my heart thudding painfully in the chest as the corpses closed in around me.
"Haven't you had enough, Jay? You are rotting from the inside. Only hell will purify your evil. Return to us. Give up the body of the child now."
I felt Kurt's pockets, having only one idea to get out of this situation. I knew I couldn't return with them. And in his right pocket, I found what I knew could be there. A pocket knife. Grabbing Andre quietly,
I flicked open the knife and pulled it to his throat.
Stand the F back!
I screamed as loud as I could, my throat hurting from the sheer force of my yelling. The circle of corpses stopped moving in on me, but my heart was still beating too fast, my hands trembling so badly I thought I might drop the knife on the ground. I wanted to throw up, but I managed to avoid it.
I'm serious right now. I'll frickin' kill this kid right in front of you if you don't let me go.
Have you gone so far down, Jay?
The elderly man said to me in the voice of an angel.
You know you must return to us eventually. Why accumulate more evil to repay? Your kind never learns. But you're not a stupid man. You must know we cannot allow you to stay here in the body of this innocent boy.
He shook his head almost like a disappointed parent. My hand shook so badly that I sliced Andre's skin slightly. Andre yelped, and a few drops of blood ran down his neck.
Kurt, what the F, man?
He whispered to me.
Let me go. This is crazy. You don't have to do this. I don't know what's going on, but... I'm not Kurt,
I said.
I possessed him during your little ritual with the Ouija board, but I'm not him, and I'm not going back to hell. No way, Andre. You have no idea what these things do to people there. They pour lead down their throats. They hang them from every pole on the street. They burn them and cut them and torment them. Then when their victims are too used up, they're buried in a field, where they're healed and come out of some massive eggplant just to do it all over again. How could anyone expect me to go back there? That's totally insane. I would rather die.
At that moment, a fleet of police cars and ambulances started to drive by, their lights flashing but their sirens off since there was no traffic out there. But they slammed on their brakes once they saw the massive crowd of people standing in the cemetery. The cop in the front car got out, looking confused. Then he saw that the people were standing around us were not really people at all. They were decomposing bodies, black eyes and skeletal figures, and his jaw fell open.
Holy shit,
he whispered. More cops got out behind him, all of them looking confused. Some pulled out their guns and started screaming orders at the walking bodies, while others got back in their cars and locked the doors, staring out in horror, unsure of what to do. Some of them called for backup on their radios. One cop got in his car and drove away like a madman, swerving between the ambulances and other police cars in front of him, his siren now blaring. He looked like he was screaming inside the car, and I think he flipped us off as he sped away. I suppressed a sudden urge to start laughing hysterically at this absurd scene. If I started laughing now, I may never stop. I felt like I was losing my mind under all the stress. I don't know who started it, but one of the cops fired his gun as a few of the corpses started walking towards them, and all hell started breaking loose. The circle of corpses rushed at the police, and then all the police started firing at once. The gunshots made my ears ring, and I heard a few bullets smash into the crypts and tombstones immediately to my left, whizzing right next to my head and chest. I let Andre go and ran for my life. I don't know if he made it out of there or not. He might be dead for all I know. I scanned Kurt's mind and found his house. He was only 14 and so, of course, lived with his parents. But I needed a place to rest and think, and that was the only one nearby. I ran to the house, running up the stairs without speaking to anyone and locking the door behind me. Shaking, shivering, sick with fear and worry, I laid down on the bed and started to cry for myself and everything I had lost. I thought about my wife and my kid, my old life, and how much I missed all of them, and I started sobbing uncontrollably, the tears staining the pillow as I screamed into it in desperation and anger. As I write this up, I look out the windows and keep seeing the silhouettes of angels out of the corner of my eye. And now the ground feels like it's starting to shake. I think they are coming for me. I wonder if I should keep running. I wonder if I should just go with them to that sick place with the red clouds and the people constantly brought back to life just to be tortured all over again. I am thinking about taking Kurt's parents hostage if I need to. The angels don't seem to want to see innocents die, and that may be my only chance.
I still have the pocket knife just in case, and there are plenty of bigger knives downstairs if I decide it necessary. Yet, the voice of the angel from the cemetery keeps repeating in my head. Do you need more rope to hang yourself with, sinner?